really staying focused and making sure that what we're innovating on or iterating is serving the larger market, because especially when working with, there's a lot of innovation. And so we're seeing systems evolve and change, which can sometimes impact how we're designing our products for.
Hey, welcome back to the show. And I am so excited today because this is one of those awesome entrepreneurs who starts something that is sustainable, it's cool, it's technical. Tania, will you please tell us who you are and what problem are you setting out to solve with your company?
First, thanks for having us on here, me on here, Todd. My name is Tania Pina, and I'm the founder and CEO of Renewable. We're based or headquartered in New York City. And what we do is we focus on different types of waste streams along the food supply chain. So we take unrecoverable vegetative waste. We also take crop residues, and we turn it into a platform of sustainable technologies, ultimately inputs for those that grow our food. So it can be commercial farms, and it can also be consumers that have a green thumb and want to garden and have more control of how their food's grown. My background, wow. I don't know if you want me to go into the background.
Yeah, do please. Yeah.
So my background is, I majored in IT from Virginia Tech, and really it was just having this kind of personal passion for what I was starting to see when I was just, I'm a really, just a very fast reader, and I love to just witness what's happening around the world. And so at that time in 2012, we were witnessing how New York City was spending roughly $77 million to export food waste because we don't have the infrastructure here and still don't really.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and just in terms of management of organic waste streams. So that then kind of inspired me based on how much waste was being consumed and the lack of infrastructure to handle it. And what I was also seeing as a pro bono prep SAT teacher at Thurgood Marshall was a volunteer program management course that I did on Saturdays with kids from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. My goal was to help them be as prepared for their SATs as possible. But at the end of the day, and I don't know if you witnessed the same, at the end of the day, really, depending on the type of food that you're nourishing yourself with is going to give you it impacts your productivity, your retention.
Oh, 100%.
How well you're doing. So if we could combine two challenges, lack of nutritional food, especially in urban areas, and the lack of infrastructure to handle food waste, and combine that to turn it into benefits, just like we do for open field or soil agriculture, turning into compost, I wanted to make more nutritionally dense food produced in indoor farms, even though it's applicable to outdoor, so that we could see more urban areas and more densely populated areas have a year-round way of growing without some of the challenges we're seeing today.
Cool. So you're taking the waste, you're somehow recomposting somehow into some product that then is like super enriched soil, or walk me through this a little bit. I want to understand this. This is cool.
Yeah. So composting is a great phrase to just associate, right? But it's a little bit more specific because it took us like 7 to 7.5 years to get it right.
All right. Walk me through this because this sounded really cool.
Yeah. So with hydroponic or soilless growing, it's really hard to take something that's naturally derived. So let's say, banana peels, lettuce, anything from last night's dinner, you put it in a 5-gallon bucket, you let it decompose, put maybe a bubbler, some water, and let it decompose and do its natural thing.
Right.
You can't really apply that same use, take that the water from the 5-gallon bucket we just described and put it in a hydroponic system, because the bacteria is going to want to, it's going to be like Chuck E. Cheese. It's going to want to go for the light, eat sugar, and just really compromise what you want to keep as a very sterile food production system.
Interesting. So
we make the compost essentially a very standardized, a clean way to grow without introducing bacteria that can cause food pathogens and other risks while growing. And the reason why that's important is because it's easier to do compost for soil. It's incredibly hard to do compost for hydroponic or soilless system. That's
interesting.
One product type. The second is the crop residues, such as Jude, and we use other types of of materials to basically serve as a peat-free solution for alternatives to soil. So the reason why that's important is globally, there is a push to find alternatives to peat because peat is a huge carbon sink. And the more we're harvesting or removing those bogs, the less of our ability to sink carbon and sequester things that we're really not trying to emit into the air.
Interesting.
So hopefully that kind of clarifies.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely clarifies. I would say I'm probably 80% following here, but that's okay. Because I am not the smartest agricultural guy. Definitely, I do have a bit of a green thumb. My wife's a big gardener. And so I am familiar with a lot of these things, but this is really, really cool stuff. So are you finding your way into, you talked about inner city and repurposing inside of the city. I know you're New York area. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. So I had a guy on the show, probably 6 months ago, who was talking to me about a very similar problem to what you're addressing. He did it different. I don't know if he's doing it differently. Maybe he's doing it with you. I don't even know. But like, he was doing some kind of repurposing inside these cities where he was buying up old warehouses and old buildings and literally building giant garden box type structures inside these units. Is that kind of where you're going with this?
Interesting. I may or may not know this individual, but there's a couple of different models. Some people are taking waste from specifically hospitality, like restaurants and hotels,
right,
and they're turning that into a dehydrated form of food waste, or they're taking it and turning it into blocks to serve as the substrate for mushrooms to grow from.
Right.
We're not approaching it with the perspective of basically putting this process inside as many small warehouses. Instead, you know, our facility, even though we're headquartered in New York City, our facility's in Rochester, and it was easier to place manufacturing because there's the agriculture economy is much larger up there, a lot of manufacturing expertise. So we see ourselves basically having a distributed manufacturing model, but having satellite facilities beyond New York. And those states
being
California, Florida, Texas, and beyond.
For sure. For sure. All the big metros. So as you do this, what is your business model? I mean, talk to me about how does this generate revenue and who's your avatar? Like, who are you trying to serve and what are they actually buying from you? Walk us through the tech or the systems that you're selling.
Yeah, good point. So our platform consists of three types of offerings. I mentioned taking food waste or unrecoverable food waste and turning that into nutrients so that soilless and hydroponic, as our first beachhead market, the indoor growers, can grow food using that fertilizer, ultimately as a replacement to mineral salts. That's one. Two is the Renutera. This is the grow media that people are using as alternatives to soil or peat, and it comes in multiple form factors. And you can use it, just like with our fertilizer, for all crop types. The third offering, and this is validated and being supported by a contract with the USDA, is to help farms, largely open field or soil farms, take their waste streams and turn it into products that can reduce their input costs. So really showing a circular business model that has been something that you'll see more information about in 2024. So our expertise is really taking waste streams, predominantly organic or only organic, and turning it into consumables for growing food. And what's proprietary and what our business model is it the scalability of producing, you know, X product from X waste stream. Our expertise can work with multiple types of waste streams. So oftentimes who we sell to, it's made of like three customer segments. It's B to C. So you have like, for example, the Scotts Miracle-Gros, the farm stands that have an indoor garden system, they would buy our grow media and the fertilizer in some cases to sell to their consumers. We also sell to resellers.
And they white label this somehow, or is it kind of a white label deal, or is it
good question
direct through you?
Good question. Sometimes there is the interest in white labeling. Sometimes the most of the times, I should say, it's often co-branded.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then the last group is the B2B, which is purely us selling to commercial farms. So the great thing about our business model is, you know, we can be versatile based on the waste, which gives us the flexibility to develop different types of products. So there's always a continuous loop of innovation. The challenging thing has always been is really staying focused and making sure that what we're innovating on or iterating is serving the larger market. Because especially when working with, I think in this field, like controlled environment agriculture, right. There's a lot of innovation. And so we're seeing systems evolve and change, which can sometimes impact how we're designing our products for.
I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode, but I also want to take just a few seconds to let you know about a project that we've been putting together for the last several months, and we're finally launching it, called the Captain's Council. You see, as a CEO or operator of a business, it can feel like you get stuck in your own head a lot of the time. You get challenges that you don't know how to resolve. You get people causing problems in your leadership team that you don't know how to resolve, and it's so hard to overcome those things by yourself. You don't have to anymore. Join the Captain's Council. Captain's Council is a group of other CEOs and operators and owners of businesses where we come together once a month for several hours to discuss the biggest challenges you're facing. You express to the council of 8 to 10 people about what's going on, where do you feel stuck? And these other people are in the same boat as you. They're running and operating their own businesses. They're your peers. They help you kind of dissect what's happening and help you see things that you may not have seen all by yourself. If you don't have a good, strong network of people around you, come join the Captain's Council. This is going to be something that will change the way you run your business and open your eyes to opportunities that you have never seen without the help of your peer group. Come check it out, captainscouncil.com. Sure, sure. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, this is fascinating because you really are dealing with so many different ends of the product. You've got the raw stuff that you're taking, the excess, the waste, and you're turning that into, so I'm assuming you have some type of process that, through which you manufacture, get it into a repurposed product that then they buy or co-brand or whatever with you. And then you also have direct distribution to consumer. Is that right? Am I following you kind of on the three product types or client types there?
You're spot on, except for we don't do direct to consumer. We do B2B to C, so through channel partnerships.
Cool. All right. Very cool. Okay. Well, that's fascinating. This is not like most normal shows that I have on here. This is a really cool process. And tell me why. Why did you want to go out and solve this? I mean, this sounds like a big problem to solve. I mean, it's obvious. This other guest I had on, the number I have floating around in my head, and you can validate this for me. He was saying something like 45% of all prepared food goes to waste, or maybe it's higher. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah,
there's a lot of waste we're giving out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it did start off with the waste problem, but then it really evolved. And in the most like the last 2 years for us, at least, it really evolved for us to want to develop the second product offering, the Renew Terra, which is the fibers, because of the peat-free needs. And so why there's so much kind of macroeconomic tailwind supporting that is globally, there's regulations forcing the industry, commercial horticulture industry, to transition from peat. And supermarkets are even
interesting,
wanting to kind of pull in produce suppliers that are transitioning from peat. So there's that aspect. And then also the, you know, it's always been around the fact that the produce market in the U.S. is roughly $144 billion. The indoor gardener or consumer market is now roughly $14 billion. So why not serve the same product need and use case, but for two different customer types that ultimately we see growth opportunity for?
I love it. All right. Very cool model. tell us now about the business. I feel like I'm kind of understanding who you're servicing and your model and all that kind of good stuff. Talk to us about your growth. You've been doing this now for over a decade or around a decade, somewhere there?
Not yet. So,
not yet. Okay.
I appreciate that. We were in R&D for roughly 7 years, almost 7.5 years for R&D.
Okay.
That was on the first product. And then we just constantly iterating on refining the formula. In the last year and a half, we developed the Renew Terra product, the fiber. And that really is a sales volume leader for us. So still today, you know, we're venture back. We've raised $9.2 million. A lot less than half is actually dilutive. We've done an incredible job raising on grants as well because of the priorities we are relevant to. But yeah, I mean, we're next year is when we'll be profitable. Really, we've needed to diversify two products so that we can sell them together, often bundled, and they're serving the same market anyways.
Fantastic. I would imagine you have a lot of very interested investors just for the sake of what you're doing, your mission, and how you're doing it. I mean, you could almost do part of what you're doing as a nonprofit, considering what you're doing to kind of repurpose all that waste. I mean, it's got to get a lot of people interested in investing what you're up to.
The interest is, so appreciate that. The interest definitely hasn't waned. I think, you know, agriculture is not the easiest sector to go after market. And then, you know, I think we've been very fortunate to have the investors that we do because they've been patient and they've been focused on impact. If we did not, you know, manufacturing to have the initial CapEx for that, especially raising venture backed, it's not for everyone. So it's not that we've spent not even more than $400,000 on CapEx, and not to say that that's not a lot of money, but it takes certain types of investors that are willing to invest in manufacturing.
Gotcha. You know, you're right. It totally does. But when they see the vision of what you're doing and how you're doing it, I think it's a very, very cool story to tell. So as you've told the story and as you've grown the story, talk to us about some of the early decisions that you made that kind of helped solidify the model and make that an easier investment and an easier sell to your clients.
Yeah, great question. And I would include investors within the same category as clients. Sure. So to our investors, we proved out the first product was the nutrients. And then I think what gave them the comfort of either reinvesting or following on and attracting new investors is because of the Renew Terra. And the fact that this benefited us in three ways: larger market size, a regulatory problem that's giving positive tailwinds to push more growth opportunity.
I gotcha.
And then three, easier product to sell, much cheaper to ship, and just easier product to scale because there's multiple form factors. So that certainly kind of re-upped on the confidence. In terms of our customers, really, they come to us, and a lot of our growth has been organic. We haven't spent any money on paid ads. They come to us for three things. They like what we're doing and how we've kind of developed this thought leadership and category around it, creating a platform of sustainability that they're not seeing from other brands or just haven't been done.
Right.
Two is we really try to at least, you know, have as many conversations to show that we can offer customization, or if they want to put feedback into what can be developed, we have that open feedback loop. And two is a lot of their customers are their customers being retailers like Whole Foods or wholesale produce distributors or direct to consumers. They want to know that they're leading with sustainability. So often what we're seeing in the produce market or food producer market is that everyone's kind of beating their chest on sustainability, who's being the best steward. And so that's our bread and butter is we've set up this so that we can try to push the needle in the industry on sustainability and the transparency of it.
Cool. I think it's super cool. I actually got a couple of people in mind who would be very interested in jumping on your raise. So
thank you.
I don't know if you're raising again anytime soon, but I I'm just thinking in my head some people that I know would align with you and your values and all that kind of stuff.
I appreciate
so,
it.
So we'll follow up after the chat. But as we talk about the growth, I mean, that's definitely some very cool iterations of your product and very smart moves in terms of getting more product out faster, quicker, probably easier to produce the Terra product than some of the other mineral, the other extraction things you're doing and things like that. But talk to us about some of the mistakes you've made. I mean, everyone makes mistakes in trying to grow and scale their business. What are some things that you wish you hadn't run into, or maybe some lessons that you learned that have now made your product better because you did make those mistakes?
Great question. And you know, for us, the good thing is that our manufacturing, with the exception of a few form factors, can largely use the same production equipment. And so we were trying to just easy and cheaper.
Yeah, so totally. Repurpose what you got.
Exactly. And so we were trying to do too many form factors at the same time. And what that caused is, okay, we were creating the nomenclature of how we were going to reference each form factor or each variant of the product, and getting the buy-in of, okay, this is how we're going to reference it. This is how it's going to be measured in the production side. This is how we're going to measure its efficacy on the product development side and testing side. And then lastly, is the customer going to understand how we're referencing the product? So we started off trying to do three form factors at once, and then we dialed it back because we had a $3,500 mistake where we didn't have the kind of the technical specs of one form factor dialed in, and we produced the wrong, we produced the whole day on the wrong product.
Hope you can sell that as something else, a new product line. Hey, check this out.
Exactly. The good thing is that we can just put it in scrap and then reuse it. So,
well, that's the beauty of repurposing everything, right?
Right, right.
Renewable mistakes.
You're not wrong. So that was an example of one. And I would say the second thing is getting comfort of everyone on the team that here's, you know, you know how it is with companies that are startups or need to act like being a startup, where you have as a turtle, like peek your head above, beyond your shell a little bit and be comfortable with that vulnerability, because especially when selling to farms, you know, some farms don't start their trial on time, or they don't tell you the exact scope that they're going to test it in. All the things that are outside of your control, you need to have a larger sample size. And I think there were some people that just weren't comfortable with that and not having a perfect product up front. And we had all the proof points to show the product works. People are going to like it. We just need to get as many,
use cases.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I hear you. That is always a game, and it's always that chicken and egg thing. And you know, it's a tricky game for every company that's trying to get out of a product development phase and into implementation. And it sounds like you've done really, really well for yourself, though. And showing that you're going to be profitable next year is a great sign, and that's really, really exciting. Talk to us about almost everyone I talk to who's gone through the build out that you've gone through, they've got somebody that there's somebody that's kind of in their corner, a mentor or someone who's kind of guided them through some of the mistakes you've made. There's somebody you'd like to give a shout out today on the show that has kind of been there for you in that way.
Yeah, I would say, you know, there's two investors of ours that have been in that corner. I would say it's the Walkstar Fund. So Gayla, she's one of the main managing partners, and then also Tracy Gray and her team at the 22 Fund. I mean, I just, like we were talking before the show, just knowing that they understand the struggles of operating, especially within agriculture and manufacturing, it's always really helpful.
Interesting. I love it. This is really, really cool. I wish you the best. I cannot wait to see how this thing grows. And, very interested in talking after the show about some contacts. I think it would benefit you a great deal. So, Tania, fantastic. I appreciate taking the time to be on here today. And is there anything else you'd like to let people know about what you're doing and how it's working?
Thanks, Todd. First of all, thank you for having us on here. And I would say, you know, if for given how much more our produce is costing, our food in general, right? I encourage everyone to at least start something small to try growing their own food, because it's that confidence. And if you are buying direct for farms or have that, you know, just awareness in your supermarkets, really keep your producers accountable to how they're growing food, because it really does matter. And they're going to grow their food based on how you want it. So put that pressure if you believe in that.
Love it. Love it. Hey, we've got our garden. It's good stuff.
Yes.
Hey, thanks so much, Tania. Appreciate you and your time and your mission. And for those listening, check it out. Tania, I'm assuming your B2B2C contacts, you're going to give us something to throw down below so people can go buy some of your product.
Yeah, sounds good. I can definitely do that.
Please, please, please do. Awesome. Thanks again. And we'll catch up with the rest of you on the next episode. Thanks, Tania.
Anytime, Todd. Thank you.
Hey, what did you think of that show? Honestly, I'm not the smartest agricultural guy, but it finally clicked in me what she was doing, and I think it's fascinating. Very, very cool business, very, very cool model, and I love companies who are simple in their product output, but very complex in their multiple client bases. I think it's very cool how she's taking byproduct, manufacturing and reprocessing it into something new, and then converting that into something that she resells through a B2B2C relationship. I think that's super cool. It's definitely unique in its distribution model, but it's so cool in that she's building off of other people's existing distribution and just producing awesome product and letting them to market. Very cool model, very awesome stuff. And I hope you enjoyed that time with Tania. One of the things that her and I talked about both before and after the show was how nice it is sometimes to have conversations with other founders. There's just something about founder to founder relationships where you start talking about business and the stresses of running a business, and you immediately understand what they're going through. This is something that I experience all the time inside of the Captain's Council. If you haven't heard about Captain's Council, that is a place you need to check out. If you are a founder, CEO, or someone operating a business entity, you need to check out captainscouncil.com. It is, imagine just building your own advisory board of active CEOs and founders. People that are currently in the throes of running their business telling you, oh my gosh, I'm dealing with that right now. Oh my goodness, the war is affecting me this way. Oh my gosh, elections are coming up and it's killing my business. Whatever is going on in the environment right now, chances are these are the CEOs going through the same thing. And it is so nice and so refreshing to have those other voices in your head helping you identify what you should and shouldn't be focusing on right now, given market conditions, and how you can grow through them. It is a fun, fun opportunity. Check out captainscouncil.com if you're one of those people that really needs those other voices, needs those other people on your team to just give you that advice, help point you in the right direction, and you're going to love it. If you like that, you're going to continue to love these episodes on the Growth and Scaling Podcast, and check out some of our other content types. You're going to love to check out some of the other things we're doing. It is so fun. I can't wait to catch up with you on there. We'll see you later.